Welcome to the Living a Naturally Healthy Life podcast with Delaine, the MD, the podcast for people looking to correct chronic illnesses such as diabetes through lifestyle change. I'm Dr. Delaine Vaughn. As a physician, I see many patients who are ill because of lifestyle decisions such as food choices. Typically, diseases such as diabetes are managed with pills or injections. This approach creates a vicious, expensive, and unhealthy cycle of medication and then more medication to address the negative side effects. As a physician and a life coach, I work with clients to resolve their diseases, get off their medications, and live a naturally healthy life. If you don't like the healthcare system in America, I recommend you use less of it by being naturally healthy. So if you feel there has to be a better, more natural way to live a healthy life, you are in the right place. Hello and welcome to the podcast. You're listening to the Reversing Diabetes with Delaine MD podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Delaine Vaughn. In my coaching business called Delaine MD, I help professional, high-achieving, self-reliant diabetics who are in the prime of their life fix their diabetes and fix their health. My clients come to me, they are sick of being sick, they're sick of taking medications, they're sick of needle sticks, they're sick of the healthcare system in America, and what it has to offer to fix their diabetes. They come to me frustrated because they know they can do difficult things. They're successful in their careers, but they can't figure out how to manage their health and fix their diabetes. They frequently come to me super worried that life is passing them by while they're sick. They're ready to start living a naturally healthy life, and that's what I help them do. That's what this podcast is dedicated to, really teaching folks the skills and the techniques that I teach my clients to help them live a naturally healthy life. So today we are going to talk about exercise and how that plays into diabetes and how it affects diabetes. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what exercise does do and what exercise doesn't do, and then I'm going to review some recommendations that were made by the American Diabetes Association and the American College of Sports Physicians. So let's dive in. What exercise does do for your diabetes? It improves your glycemic control, so that's your blood sugar control. It improves your cardiovascular health, so it improves your heart. It improves your blood pressure. It improves your quality of life. It decreases the rate of death, what we call mortality. It decreases mortality. It does all sorts of wonderful things. The studies actually show that combined exercise, when combined with modest weight loss, improves the risk of developing diabetes in high-risk individuals by 58%. When they did the same study, but instead of having the study subjects do exercise and weight loss, they put the study subjects on metformin, they found that the decrease in development of diabetes was only 31%. So exercise and diet changes actually do better than our medications do in helping you avoid development of diabetes. So exercise has immediate effects on your diabetes or your insulin action, and it also has long-term benefits, and we're going to talk about those. So I do want to touch on what exercise does not do. Exercise does not undo your bad food choices. So if you eat a pizza, there is no amount of exercise that's going to undo that bad food choice. So recognizing what exercise will do and what exercise doesn't do, you actually have to make the dietary changes in order to not have to suffer the consequences of eating the foods in your diet that make you sick. There are a number of studies out there. They all kind of say the same thing. Exercise, it can be used as a way to prevent or delay the development of diabetes. Diet and exercise are the central part of diabetes management. Prevention and management of type 2 diabetes. Exercise and diet are the primary components of it. The ADA has actually had the recommendation since 2010 that when we use medications to treat type 2 diabetes, they should augment, they should supplement, they should be added to lifestyle changes. They should not be replacing them. And of course, this is where we get it wrong in medicine in America, right? Like medicine in America just throws pills, throws meds. Let's just start a new med. What needs to be happening numero uno is that we're doing lifestyle modifications, including diet and exercise. Let's talk about the immediate effects of exercise on your blood sugars. As your muscles start contracting and the intensity of exercise increases and the duration increases, your muscles actually start to preferentially use glucose from your bloodstream. So they use that for energy. And they use it in a way that does not require insulin. So if you're not aware of why that's important, it's because diabetics are insulin resistant. It's not that you don't have enough insulin in your system. It's that you have too much insulin in your system and your cells no longer respond
to the message the insulin is giving them. So if we're trying to take up blood sugar from the bloodstream into our cells using insulin, but we're no longer responding to that message, we can't do it. When you're exercising, your muscles actually use the blood sugar in a way that doesn't require insulin to get the blood sugar into the cell, which is awesome because it bypasses that insulin resistance. More information on insulin resistance, go back to my podcast, podcast 1 through 4, and then podcast 14, 16, and 23. I talk about insulin resistance in that. So if you're confused about what that means, go back and check out those other podcasts for more information about that. Certainly, this is part of the science that I teach my clients when they sign up for my program. We dig into this much deeper. So other immediate effects that you need to be aware of when you're exercising, effects on your blood sugar when you're exercising. High intensity cardio workouts can cause an increased release of stress hormones like epinephrine and cortisol. Those will cause blood sugar to be produced. It will cause your blood sugar to go up. So you need to be aware of that. If you're going from doing nothing to playing 3 hours of hardcore tennis every day, you're probably going to have this effect on your blood sugars. It's going to not do what you want it to do. Your blood sugar is going to go up instead of down. So recognize the intensity that you're exerting yourself will have an effect on your blood sugars. You really want this moderate intensity, not a super extreme intensity in your workouts. So then there are also long-term effects that are really awesome on our blood sugars, on our insulin resistance from the exercise. So that effect that bypasses the insulin resistance, where our cells start to take up blood sugar without utilizing that insulin, those effects can last up to 72 hours. That's 3 days after your workout. And that's for a cardio workout. We also see chronic improvement in blood sugars, specifically fasting blood sugars, with weight exercises. So weight work, resistance training. So there are a number of great long-term effects that exercise can have on your insulin resistance, which improve, of course, your overall blood sugars. The results that you get from exercise are really, really impactful to your blood sugars. So before you start any exercise program, you need to think about whether you need to be evaluated by a physician to see if you're safe for exercise. Recognize diabetics are known for having coronary artery disease, in addition to all sorts of other things. Diabetes also means you're at higher risk for heart disease. And so you don't want to strain your heart if your heart isn't healthy enough for that. So if you are a diabetic and you intend to do anything more strenuous than a brisk walk, you should really be evaluated by your doctor prior to implementing that exercise program, okay? So before you start an exercise program that is more strenuous than a brisk walk, you really should see your doctor. But recognize a brisk walk is enough to benefit your blood sugars. So doing 150 minutes of a brisk walk in a week, however you want to divide that up, we're going to talk about how to divide that up most effectively. 150 minutes in a week, you're going to have benefits on your blood sugars. So don't wait for that physician evaluation. Get in with your doctor. That's fine, but set the appointment. In the meantime, start doing those brisk walks. And then once you get cleared by your doctor, you can start doing the 3-hour tennis matches or whatever it is you want to do. But before then, start doing the brisk walks because you're going to see a benefit in your blood sugars just from the brisk walk. So now I want to talk to you and review the recommendations made by the ADA and the American College of Sports Medicine. They did a joint statement where they made recommendations on activities for diabetics. So their joint statement covers everything from activities to blood sugar management, to diabetes prevention, to gestational diabetes, to safe and effective practices for exercising with diabetes-related complications. So we are going to talk about activities, blood sugar management, and blood sugar management during exercise. We're not going to talk about those other things. I really do dig into the safe and effective practices if you have any diabetes related complications in my program. So if that is something you're interested in, there's help for that as well. So let's talk about types of exercises and kind of the recommendations for what kind of exercise, rate of progression for your exercise, how exercise will affect weight loss and maintenance, how exercise, what your frequency needs to be, what your intensity needs to be, what your duration needs to be, all of that jazz. So we're going to dig into that. And then I do want to talk about some other things after that. So what kind of exercise? So their joint statement really makes no clear recommendation about whether you should be doing walking, running, tennis, or swimming, right? What their recommendation is that you're doing something, anything that gets your heart rate up and keeps it up. And then they make recommendations that you should be using large muscle groups because that's really what's going to be getting your heart rate up quickest. And then they also, in addition to the aerobic component, which is those things that get your heart rate up, they recommend doing resistance training, so weight work, twice per week. And again, they don't make any recommendation. You can do machines or you can do resistance like free weight training. It doesn't matter, but you should be doing something that gets your heart rate up. And then in addition to those exercises, you should be doing twice a week weight work. And again, it can be free weights or it can be machine weight. So your rate of progression, that should be gradual. That seems to make sense. You want to avoid injury. Anything that you do more quickly than gradual is going to lead to more injuries. But more than that, it also enhances compliance. It enhances your sticking to it. So if you're so sore the day after a workout that you can barely put your shirt on, it's really hard to talk yourself into making a habit of that. So doing gradual progression is really what's recommended to enhance your stick-to-itiveness, okay? Weight loss and maintenance exercise, of course, this is long shown in multiple studies as a key to maintaining weight loss for anybody who loses weight. So in addition to dietary changes and the behavioral changes, which is what, again, I work with my clients on, exercise is key to weight loss maintenance. So the frequency of aerobic activity, that 150 minutes per week, they recommend that you work out at least 3 days a week. So you could do a 50-minute workout 3 days a week. That would meet the criteria. But they do recommend that you never separate workouts by more than 2 days. Really, like 30 minutes, 5 days a week is completely sufficient. On weights, again, they recommend 2 days per week and never at least 2 days per week. You could work out more, but they do recommend never doing consecutive. You should not be doing consecutive weight work, consecutive days of weight work. So you shouldn't do it Monday and Tuesday. You should at least skip one day. I would add a caveat to that. If you have been working out with weights for the last 5 years, you're probably fine to do daily weight work. But when you're getting started, they really make the recommendation that you avoid consecutive days. And that's really just to give your muscles the opportunity to repair and build and heal. So aerobic workout, 150 minutes a week, at least 3 days a week. I would recommend doing it 5 days a week, but whatever you can get in, that we're happy with that. And then weights 2 days a week at least. So the intensity of your workout, this is something that's a little challenging. In the old days, we used to use this equation, which I still use. But now they recommend like getting evaluated in an exercise lab where they actually evaluate through a machine your maximal aerobic capacity. So you want the intensity of your cardio or aerobic workouts to be about 40 to 60% of your maximal aerobic capacity. In the old days, and you can write this down, in the old days, we used an equation. You took 220 and you subtracted your age. That number was considered your maximum aerobic capacity. And then you would just multiply that number by 40% or multiply it by 60%. And then you'd get a range of what your workout, your heart rate should be. Okay. So that's the intensity. Sorry. The 40 to 60% of maximal aerobic capacity is typically based on your heart rate during the exercise. So you would get your maximal aerobic capacity through this machine in an exercise lab, and that would be measured as a heart rate. And then you'd want to exercise at 40 to 60% of that. Same thing with that equation I just gave. 220 minus your age, take that number, multiply it by 40%, multiply it by 60%. You're going to get a range of your heart rate where you want to keep it. I will tell you, I think when I do that equation, my maximal aerobic capacity is supposed to be somewhere between like 110 and 140, maybe. I'm 46 years old and I did the equation the other day and I can't exactly remember exactly what it was. Whenever I exercise, my heart rate is always in the 150s and I'm happy with it there. So, but I've been doing it for decades. Like it's not an issue for me. I'm not worried that I'm going to have any cardiac event. I don't get chest pain. There's nothing like that going on. So recognize that this is just a guideline. This is not a hard and fast rule. So don't get excited if your heart rate gets a little high. You're just going to want to bring down the intensity. And again, if you are wanting to do something where your heart rate does get higher, that's totally fine. Just get cleared by your doctor. So the intensity of resistance work and training, you want to have moderate to vigorous resistance training or weight work. So moderate to vigorous, you do not want to feel like it's easy. You do not want to feel like you're putting minimal effort in. You really want to feel like you're putting some big effort in. They make recommendations, and we're going to talk about it here in a little bit, about doing repetitions to where your muscle fatigues, where your muscle feels like it can't do anymore. And we're going to talk about that. But to get to that point, you really need to be using moderate to vigorous intensity in your resistance training. So duration, aerobic and cardio duration, we talked about, you're going to want to do that 150 minutes per week divided up at least by, you need to be exercising at least 3 days a week. Again, I would recommend doing it 5 days a week, partly because you're setting a pattern of behavior. You're giving yourself more days of the week than not where you're out there exercising and taking care of your body. In addition, you're going to stack that 72-hour benefit to your blood sugar. So that's really important also. So the aerobic duration of aerobic and cardio activity we talked about. The resistance and weight training. Okay, so 5 to 10 different exercises, including most of our major muscle groups. Okay, so that's the first part of their recommendations. So that means 5 to 10, like I would do 3 ab workouts and 3 arm workouts and 3 leg workouts to give me a total of 9 different exercises that I'm doing. So that's squats, lunges, leg curls, sit-ups, leg lifts, push-ups, chest presses, bicep curls, tricep extensions, planks. All of those things count as different exercises, and you want 5 to 10 of them. You want to initially do 10 to 15 repetitions for each exercise. As your weight increases, you can decrease that to doing 8 to 10 repetitions. And again, you want to get your muscle set near fatigue with each set. So if you're doing 10 to 15, at the end of that 15, your muscles need to be near fatigued, meaning that they couldn't do an extra rep. And then you want to do 1 to 4 sets of repetitions. So if you're doing 5 different exercises and you're doing 10 repetitions for each exercise, and you're doing it 4 sets of repetitions, you're going to end up doing 20 sets of exercises. Okay. So just so you clearly understand what is going on there, you can definitely get a really nice workout in just by doing the weights, and definitely can work that in twice a week, would be one of your workouts. I think that would be completely sufficient, and you definitely see the benefits of that. So that's the duration on weight and resistance training. And remember, they don't make any clear recommendations about whether you use a machine or whether you use free weights, either shall work. And then there is a caveat that they made in their recommendations about flexibility training. So this is really like yoga or Tai Chi or Pilates or something like that. So they recommend flexibility training should be included in your exercise regimen, but should not substitute the other training that's been discussed. So you can't take out one of your cardio exercises for the week. Instead of doing 5, you do 4 and then add a yoga class. That's not going to cut it. The flexibility training needs to be in addition to the other, the 2 times a week weight training and the 5 times a week or 150 minutes a week of cardio training. So be aware of that. So I do want to talk about how you manage and what you watch for with low blood sugars and exercise. I have an entire module in my program talking about how do you manage low blood sugars, because it's really important that you know about this. You always should check your blood sugar. Do not treat something just because it feels like a low blood sugar, okay? Check it first, because there's a lot of different things that can cause the sensation or the symptoms of low blood sugar that have nothing to do with your blood sugar. So always check your blood sugar. Don't just blindly treat it, first off. Second, you should always have a glucometer with you while you're exercising, and a treat, I say, like we're puppies and we deserve a treat. Some kind of food source, high protein food source with you while you're exercising. I know that many doctors, and certainly do what your doctor says, I'm not your physician, do what your doctor says, but they make recommendation of these super like peanut butter or candy or glucose tabs. And that's fine if that's what you have. I make the recommendation that you add complex carbohydrates and protein. You're not using these simple carbohydrates, these simple sugars. It tends to overshoot low blood sugars. So recognize that. But low blood sugar and exercise is a real thing, and there is a risk for that. So the risk of low blood sugar is really dependent on your treatment regimen, your diabetes treatment regimen. So if you are on diet only, like if you're treating your diabetes with your diet, you have a very low risk actually of developing any kind of low blood sugar during your exercise. However, if you are on a regimen that causes insulin to be secreted, so this is your sulfonylureas, your things like gliburide, glipizide, glimepiride, and some of your other meds, if it causes your pancreas to squeeze out more insulin, you are at risk for having this happen. If you are on insulin, you're at risk also. So if you're on an oral medication that causes your insulin to increase, it's a secreting, an insulin secreting medication, you're going to want to check your blood sugar before you exercise. And if it's below 100, you're going to want to consider taking a snack before you exercise. I would definitely recommend that you at least have a snack on hand. And then for insulin users, the American Diabetes Association recommends you have a snack before your workout. Recognize those important caveats to exercise and your medication regimen. These recommendations can be adjusted based on your workout. So a shorter, more intense workout requires less intervention. You need to be less worried about having low blood sugar. And the reason that that is because what we worry about most with exercise is later onset hypoglycemia or later onset low blood sugar that occurs after your workout. This is due to the exercise session depleting all of the sugar in your muscles, the liver stores of sugar, and then of course the sugar that's floating around in your blood. It eats up all of that sugar because you're needing it to energize, to provide fuel for your workout. So when you're on a medication that creates more insulin and you don't have any glucose in your system to meet that insulin that's there, you're going to drop your blood sugars too low. And that's really the danger here. So monitoring your symptoms and always having your glucometer near you so that you can check your blood sugars if you feel like something's going wrong. That's the really important part. The bottom line is if you're getting insulin from anything that other than your unmedicated pancreas. So if you're taking like metformin doesn't cause your pancreas to squeeze out any more insulin. So that's not an issue. So all of the insulin you're getting, even when you're on metformin, is actually coming from your unmedicated pancreas, your pancreas without any medications acting on it. That's where your insulin is coming from if you're just on metformin or if you're just diet controlled. If you're on any of the other medications, you really need to have a conversation with your doctor. You always need to have your glucometer near you, and you probably need to have a snack available to you during your workouts. It's really, really important. And again, this is what I work with in my clients. This is why they hire me. I am a medical physician and I can help them through this part. And they can always refer questions to me. But if you're listening to this in the podcast, any questions, you need to refer to your physician for that. Recognize exercise can cause high blood sugars, just like we talked about with the release of some of those stress hormones and the high intensity workouts. So this is a bigger problem with a type 1 diabetic. Recognize any recommendations that I make are always for type 2 diabetics. I do not usually work with type 1 diabetics. So exercise usually will bring your blood sugars down, but if it's really intense, you can cause your blood sugar to go up. It should not cause a problem in a type 2 diabetic, but I do highly recommend drinking a lot of water, making sure when you're exercising that you're drinking just plenty of water, copious amounts of water. So lastly, I want to really encourage you, get yourself cleared by your doctor and then get out and move. That is the best part of living a naturally healthy life, is that you get to go out and experience the world in a way that you cannot do it when you're sick. And really, that is what I truly help my clients do. Learn to be naturally healthy so that they can get out and go live their lives to the fullest and do all the amazing things they haven't been able to do because they're sick. So get out there and move, get cleared by your doctor, and then get out there and start moving and living your life. I hope you found this helpful. If you have any questions, definitely email me, Delaine@DelaineMD.com. If you're interested in working with me, if you're ready to put this diabetes thing behind you and let 2021 be the new year for you, where you're living your naturally healthy life and doing all the things you always dreamed of, you've got this successful career and you've got resources to do it, you just don't have the energy to get it done, reach out to me. See if my program's right for you. Delaine@DelaineMD.com. I answer all my emails. Let me know if you have any questions. You have a great week. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and share with your friends and family. Also, leave me a review. If you want to resolve your diabetes naturally without any pills or injections, I can help you. Visit DelaineMD.com for more information. Click on the Work With Me tab, send me a message, and we can set up a mini coaching session. You guys have a great week. I'll talk to you soon.